He pioneered Jets blogging and podcasting. He brought smiles to the faces of Jets fans all over the world. He was there through the good and bad. And then, one day, he vanished. People far and wide wondered, where has he gone? When will he return? Thankfully, the answer is now. The OG of Jets podcasting and vlogging is back.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
This is There's Always Next Year with Brian Bassett.
I'm back. The real me. Let's not make a whole thing of it.
And his co-hosts, Chef Travis Milton.
Today we're going to be making the students my tasty baked ziti with basil and fresh mozzarella.
And Josh Conrad.
Oh, my brother, testify.
On Play Like a Jet Digital.
Welcome back to There's Always Next Year on the Play Like a Jet Network. I'm your host, Brian Bassett. You can follow me on Twitter at Brian_Bassett. And with me, as always, whether the team is across the pond or on this side of the pond, you have they drove into the pond because the GPS system told them to do it. We have Travis and Josh. You can find Travis Milton on Twitter at -37board27 and Josh Conrad at Josh_Conrad. Gentlemen, the Falcons went all the way to England to play as home and away game as one will get. And they didn't show up to the stadium. The fans showed up to the stadium at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Jets lost to the Falcons 27-20. It was not as close as it seemed. Travis, you watched the game. What were your thoughts in terms of how this game played out? And it seemed like one of those opportunities that they let get away. What did you think when you watched the game?
I think partially, yeah, it definitely seems like an opportunity to let it get away, you know, with Calvin Ridley out and so many of their defense out on the Falcons. You know, it seemed like a good opportunity for the Jets to kind of, you know, build a little bit of confidence and come out of a game with a win that, you know, similar to the Titans game, a lot of injuries that, you know, the Falcons aren't great, but still don't know that, you know,
at factored full strength, in, you still have to play. Yeah. You still have to play the team across from you. Right. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, I felt like it was an opportunity missed in that aspect, but you know, the Falcons just out-coached the heck out of us. You know, they exploited a lot of the weaknesses that no one has really bizarrely not, you know, kind of shied away from exploiting, like the safety position. You know, they were just destroying us over the middle. Kyle Pitts is an amazing athlete. You know, there was a lot of like good coverage on him at points, but I mean, he's just really freaking good. I that's one thing that really stood out to me, but you know, it was just exploiting a lot of the weaknesses. And, you know, I talked about it last week about how the cornerbacks, I think, were helping the defensive line and vice versa on getting pressures. And you could see that, you know, because, you know, the corners were getting exposed because of the midfield coverage that was just non-existent. The defensive line wasn't getting any kind of push. You know, wasn't great. The offensive line actually played a decent game for, you know, the first time I feel like I could walk away and go like, wow, you guys played solid. You know, run blocking wasn't great, but pass blocking was really, really good. But you know, I think
so you're saying was, Travis, would you be saying that they might have been wearing pull ups because they didn't
because they did the not bed. Shit the bed. They did yeah, not okay. shit the bed. First week okay. Like I really want to make a little trophy that says didn't shit the bed award. And they get that for the first week ever. Yeah. You know, the biggest thing was Zach Wilson. Just he looked like dog shit. I mean, he was screwing up on simple throws. And I think that was the most worrisome thing about the game was he was missing open reads and trying too hard to stretch the field. I think his confidence swung a little too hard on the other end. And, you know, he's trying these out routes when he's got stuff open in the middle. He's got checkdowns open. It was and he's missing the throws on the checkdowns. That was the worst thing for me about the game.
Yeah. Josh, what was your summation or kind of key themes you saw from this game? Yep. Yep. A lot of what Travis just said. I did not foresee the Jets secondary, mainly the safeties, like Trav just said, really letting Matt Ryan look like the Matt Ryan of 10 years ago. That was super frustrating for me. And I also thought, even specifically about Zach Wilson, is I was trying to put into words, like, man, what, like, everything felt just off, like just a half a beat off. He'd miss a read. He'd get zeroed in on a target and, you know, a linebacker's reading his eyes or whatever. And it just felt like that rookie thing that you do where you're like, okay, let me mentally think about every step of this process and then execute it perfectly, that, you know, a pro or someone that, you know, like the game is coming more naturally to, just doesn't have to spend the mental energy. And so in every way, he just looked like a rookie quarterback, like he really did. And I think there is probably a part that, listen, they win a dramatic game last week, go on the road. Cal Ridley's not going to be playing. Russell Gage isn't playing. And so suddenly this game looks very winnable. And he just didn't have the sharp, maybe preparation or just enough of the reps in the plays that they were calling to just do it without thinking about it. Felt like he was overthinking, felt like he was actually spending the mental energy to get his feet right, to get his shoulders squared up, to get his head downfield, to read all of his progressions. Like everything just felt like it was taking a quarter second at a time. And so everything just looked super slow motion. So I think frustrating in a lot of ways. I was really thankful to see some really good grades out of the offensive line. I thought ABT played really well. I feel like there's a lot of good things that are happening. And at the same time, we have a rookie quarterback, guys, and rookie quarterbacks are rookie quarterbacks for a reason. I think recent years, when you have a mobile quarterback, it's easy to disguise some of the shortcomings as a thrower or a passer, because if a play breaks down, you know, a Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, those guys can just take off and run. And that's just not Zach Wilson's game. So, you know, it is certainly frustrating to have a pocket passer that has to develop, but a pocket passer in the NFL has to develop. So a frustrating loss. Felt like it was winnable the first half. If it went even okay, maybe they win that game, sneak out a win on the road, but not a lot to come home feeling great about.
Yeah, rookies are going to rookie. That's going to happen. At the same time, like, I have to ask you, Josh, I think Travis and I both want to know, like, this game happened Sunday morning, East Coast time. Josh, we all know you're a man of the cloth.
I am.
Sunday morning game. So we need a straight answer. Were you in your newly designated position this week, aka mowing the lawn, or were you doing something else at the time of this game?
I was at our New Haven location, running around like a madman, having church. We set up in a mobile setup. And so we have a big theater downtown that we rent from. So all the setup and getting all of our volunteer teams and greeting people and leading service, all those pieces were certainly in place. And I will tell you, at every moment I could look down to my phone and get a sense of where the game was at. I was doing so.
But you were not holding a lawnmower with the kill switch engaged. Is that what you're telling me? Mowing piece of grass? Is that what you're trying to tell me, Josh?
I should have been more Carl Spackler than fatherly priest this week. So I was not groundskeeping, boys. Listen, we're now two weeks in. When I mow the lawn, the Jets win. When I do not mow the lawn, the Jets lose. So 1-4. This is the new analytics of the NFL. Is, did Josh mow a lawn? Yes, the Jets are going to win. No, they're not going to win the game.
All right. I mean, this is it. Every Jets fan wants to know what's going on with this team. It has nothing to do with Zach Wilson. It has nothing to do with an offense coordinator trying to figure it out. This has nothing to do with the defense staying on the field too long and lining up, you know, JFM against Kyle Pitts. Like, that's not what this is about. This, everyone can blame Josh Conrad, and you can find him and tweet him at Josh_Conrad and tell him your displeasure with the fact that he is not taking care of his business. All right.
Whatever hashtag the team uses for this year, it should just be hashtag mow the lawn. And if we get that trending, then we know that we're affecting the team in a positive way. So hashtag mow the lawn at Josh Conrad, and I will do what I need to do.
I'll get my lawnmower out.
All gas, no mulch.
no mulch. All gas, no mulch. All right. So anyway, so now we know. Now we know. We will be checking in, fans. We will be keeping up with this story on a weekly basis to make sure that we're getting the kind of outcomes that we need from this team directly from Josh. All right.
I dropped the ball. My bad.
It's fine. All right. I'm going to posit something to you all. I'm curious what you think about this. We have seen the Jets be outscored in the first half of football 75-13 over their first five games. The last team that basically has scored seven or few points in each of the first halves of the first five games were the San Francisco 49ers of 2015. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure that was that a bad team? I feel like that was one of those like the Falcons.
Alex Smithy games.
Like they go through that. It might have been, I don't know if it was post. I'm gonna have to look it up now. But the Niners were going through this weird like up and down. Like I can't remember if that was the Singletary days or like the Harbaugh days. But anyway, like that's pretty bad. It's pretty bad that they're the first team to do that. I think there's a lot of, you know, this scoring issue is certainly the first half problems are they're symptom of larger things. And I think there's things that we can talk about, right? So like overly jumpy quarterback, like you guys have talked a lot about it, you know, questionable line play, you know, self-inflicted, they're getting in their head. I guess one of the things that always happens to, I shouldn't say always happens, but regularly happens to the NFL is that the offensive coordinator scripts the, you know, the first 30, 40 plays of the game on offense, and they run that through. Just depends on the team, depends on the situation. And so I'm curious, do you think that this is kind of a situation where we have an offensive coordinator who's poorly scripting plays with a quarterback and that is, you know, not meshing, and it's not really until the second half where they're kind of off the script and they're just kind of, you know, playing based on what's available, what personnel are out there or whatever. Do you think that has a factor in it? Because like one of my big beefs with Zach Wilson coming into the draft and the Jets was he's a guy, and we've talked about this in previous weeks, he's a guy who works well when he's off script. I'm not saying he can't throw a timing route. I'm just saying like he seems to be more of an improviser than anything else. And, you know, in that way, like, I guess, would it make more sense if the Jets just came out and ran like a 2-minute offense kind of situation? Just do that from the start of the game and see what happens, because then you're going to be looking at, you know, what's the other team doing? You're calling, you know, two plays in the huddle or like whatever. And then you're just using the play based on what you're seeing. You know, you run an RPO or like whatever it is. Like, could they do different things where they are getting out of their own head and they're getting the offensive coordinator off the script? Am I crazy? Josh, what do you think about this?
I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't think you're crazy. I think there's part of every quarterback's progression as a professional that requires coaching. You know, as often as he gets compared to Aaron Rodgers, the main difference I am seeing so far, even from a young Aaron Rodgers, like I'm not trying to compare them now, maybe the tail end of Rodgers' Hall of Fame career, but you know, even going back to some of those early days in Green Bay, is that there was still a plan. There was still seemingly there was a game flow. There was personnel around him. There seemed like there was a competent game plan put together. That I'm seeing so much disjointed play calling and so much, I think not a universal plan put together, which again, maybe some of the improvisation that they're letting Zach do, is a result of that, but waiting till the play breaks down before you let your quarterback do what he's good at is probably not wise. And at the same time, just giving him the keys to the Ferrari without him knowing how to drive a stick shift, probably also not wise. So there has to be some combo, right? There's gotta be some grid or canvas that he's told he can play in. But I don't know that he's getting that, and I don't know they have the personnel. I still think Becton being out is hurting them more than maybe we realize, and there's just not a lot of continuity on the line still. And so some of the things I think he wants to do, he's not been able to do yet. And so, you know, we can't go 4 years though, guys. We can't go 4 years of Sam Darnolding this and going, man, do we have a guy? Do we not have a guy? Like, I think they're going to have to figure some stuff out pretty soon to let him do what he's good at sooner rather than later, so that they can decide how much they're going to start building around him and how soon.
Yeah. Travis, what do you think? Do you agree with Josh that it, while, you know, a noble idea, not something that's ever going to happen, or what are your thoughts?
I mean, it's the blind leading the blind. I mean, it's the same instance for Matt LaFleur as it is for Kyle Wilson. I mean, he's never called plays before. You know, he's learning at the same time as Zach is, which, you know, compounds the errors and compounds, you know, if he doesn't necessarily know what he's doing, and I'm not saying he doesn't know what he's doing, but although sometimes it seems that way, you know, how is he going to script these plays for Wilson if he doesn't really know what he or how he needs to be scripting? Or, you know, this is his first time around calling plays, and, you know, he's got a rookie quarterback. It's his first time dealing with this kind of stuff. I really think it's that kind of thing. You know, I think that does kind of lean into, you know, I kind of, not to echo last week's theme, but it's almost Ted Lasso-y of, you know, get out there and call a false nine, or, you know, Lasso special, do something that, you know, if the standard way of doing things isn't working, like start looking outside of the box. And that applies to everything on the offense, whether it be, you know, we and every other Jet fan in the world have harped about, you know, where's Denzel Mims, and, you know, you see what he does, you know, in the Falcons game. And, you know, every time he's touched the ball, it's been a, you know, 40, 50 yard gain. You know, if what's there isn't working, you've got to start looking at other ways to make it work. And I think that's the biggest thing. So, you know, he does seem to operate really well out of like a no huddle kind of 2 minute kind of thing. You know, I don't think it's a bad option.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
You mentioned Sam Darnold. I have to say, I saw a funny tweet. I wish I could reference it, who said it, but it was great. It was basically like, you know, poor Sam Darnold, like he's in this situation and all these turnovers, and like, if only we can get him to a good offense, like the Buccaneers or someone. And I was just like, oh my God, that's it's so funny. So like, this is a problem that will continue unless you kind of address it from a root point of view. And I think this, you know, Sam Darnold as the, you know, exiled savior, I think we're hopefully past that point. And, you know, right, we have to burn the ships in terms of, you know, Sam Darnold, or, you know, who the Jets could have chosen. It doesn't mean that this is going to be a successful campaign, because we've done that. It just means that, you know, we have what we have, right? We have to move forward, as you're saying. And so I hope that the Jets can do that. I hope that they can figure this sort of situation out, right? And it moves away from a blind leading blind situation. One of the things Robert Saleh said is that, you know, he is going to take a hard look at, he and the coaches, you know, need to take a hard look at, you know, what they're doing in practice versus what they're doing on the field on Sunday. And he, you know, had a quote, he kind of used an analogy of playing golf. He says it's easy to stand at the driving range and hit 300 yard drives. It's, can you do it when you're in the tee box and you have water on your left and sand on your right? That's something, you know, he's talking about Zach, but then he's also talking about the coaches. That's something he has to work on. He and the coaches have to work on. So the point being that, right, like, you know, and I don't know how many Jets coaches have talked about how great they are in practice. Like, I mean, that is like a time honored tradition for Jets coaches to talk about, and teammates like to talk about, how great their practices were this week, and then, right, just fall flat on Sunday. So like, nobody wants to hear.
No,
we're not talking about practice, right? Like, nobody wants to hear.
Not talking
about
practice.
That's right, John.
Not a game. Do coaches know that? Do coaches know that we as fans do not want to hear how great practice was after we lose to the Falcons in London? Like, we do. I don't care how good practice was. Like, go back and watch every single Adam Gase press conference, you know, over the last 3 years, and he led with it every single week. Yeah, you know, we had a really great week in practice. Didn't come together today. We're gonna try harder. Like we just don't care. Like we don't care how good practice was. We don't.
Yeah.
Stop saying.
Yeah.
We don't care.
Yeah. It's got to show up. The results have to show up on Sunday. And so yeah, I think they'll have a break here, which is good, right? They get the early bye. That'll afford them some time to think and figure things out, get some things ready for their post bye game. You know, while the team's away, the coaches will obviously still be at work. You know, unlike the Jacksonville Jaguars and Urban Meyer, of course, who, you know, he's looking at any chance he can to cut out on a weekend early, clearly. But you know, I mean, so that's let's just say that, like, we could have Urban Meyer as our head coach, right? Like that could be a situation that eventuated, and thank God it didn't. But you know, at least we have, I think, a coach who is dedicated and will work to get things right. And right, he's kind of on record as saying, like, that's what I'm going to be working on over the next 2 weeks. All right, so there's no game coming up. But I do want to hit a couple bits of news, and then we'll go through our grades from the last week. These things have happened for a while now. So listeners, this is very stale, but I thought it would be interesting to just talk quickly about them. The first is the Marcus May situation. So obviously Marcus May is injured. Last week it comes out that he had a couple of, you know, situations with police where he was arrested for a DWI. And then while that charge is pending, he got picked up on a lesser charge, which was knocked down for, I think, driving with a suspended license or something like that. There was talk from his agent about how, you know, he'll be healthy for the trade deadline, obviously, you know, implying that he's someone the Jets might move. So Josh, what do you think about the Marcus May situation, and how do you feel like the Jets should play this over the next couple months?
Yeah. I think they're not going to get in on the trade market what they're going to want for him, unless the Vikings call and want to offer us a second round pick and then not play Marcus May at all. Chris Herndon, by the way, on the year, still zero targets, zero catches, and that's a fourth round pick. So maybe there's value. Maybe there's value for a guy like Marcus May. Here's what concerns me most about the Marcus May situation. When the officers had pulled him over, he said he hadn't been drinking. The smell in the car was from 2 days before, and then he didn't take a sobriety test. It's those things that I go, man, like, you're an NFL athlete. Yeah. There's not puke in your car for 2 days. There just isn't. You've been drinking. It's those comments that I think for a guy like Robert Saleh, or for the Jets organization, it's things like that, like, I don't actually think it's the offense. I think it's the potential cover up or the lying or just whatever makes you a little bit untrustworthy that concerns an NFL franchise, probably more than the actual event itself. So, I'm not sure they're going to get more than a late pick for a guy like Marcus May. It's not like he's proven it. You know, he's not at a level of all pro selections like Jamal Adams was before the Seahawks trade. Like he's still kind of a guy that you're like, he's pretty good. But he's also, I think, 27, 28 years old. So it's not like he's also super young. So I think in a situation like this, you hold on to what you got. Obviously they're going to be continuing to draft for every position. I'm sure if they find a safety that they really like in the draft, they're going to go snag him, but super concerning, frustrating for sure. I'd be shocked if they're not shopping him. And I would still be shocked though, if they moved on from him. And again, like if you puke in your car for 2 days, I've got toddler boys. If they throw a chicken nugget on the floor, like, bro, I'm getting it out of there because it's going to smell in like an hour. 2 days of puke in my car, like burn the car down and get a new one. So,
right.
Not very flattered by how he handled it. Not sure they're going to get much value for him. Hope he gets well, and I hope he can continue to be a productive player on this team.
Yeah. Currently, you know, the Jets have him on the franchise tag. He's making $10 million. You know, his over the cap, which is a great site. If you don't, you know, read that site, if you're interested in the cap at all, and, you know, just the Jets fan to boot. So he always loves to write articles when a Jets contract is signed. You know, that his OTC valuation is $2.5 million for this season. Mm-hmm. So like to go out and sign a 28-year-old safety, you know, one of the, let's say, lesser valued or least valuable positions in the sport, is foolish, especially when the Jets have shown, you know, their ability to hit on defensive backs, you know, late in the draft and kind of, you know, turn safeties into linebackers, get a lot out of, you know, let's say lesser rated guys. It seems like that would be a waste of, going out and using a first round pick on that kind of player, or a lot of, you know, cap room on that sort of player, if they can find the kind of players that they need to fill out their back end. To your point, if you let him walk, the Jets would get some sort of compensatory pick. It's going to be weird because of his, you know, potential looming suspension for however many games based on disciplinary stuff. But you figure that he would be worth something, that the Jets would get a compensatory draft pick in 2023. So, you know, he might not net a third, but a fourth or a fifth. So then, you know, you play the game of, okay, so, you know, the way it works in the NFL is if you want to trade somebody for their second round pick in the upcoming draft, then you pay whatever the prior round would be for the next year. So if I want Josh's second round pick, I would give him my first round for the following year. So then if you just walk through, let's say, a fourth or fifth round pick, forward into the 2022 draft class, you know, that means like basically a third or fourth. So, right. So if you want to realize that value more quickly, then, you know, the Jets should be okay with taking a third, probably a fourth for someone like May. And then if they don't want that to happen, then they just let May walk, and then they get whatever they get in 2023 based on the compensatory calculations. And so, right, I would be very happy for them to get a compensatory pick. The Jets have not been good in that regard, but that's something that Joe Douglas, you know, he's a guy who came out of systems where they understand that compensatory model well. And so my hope is that he would use this as an opportunity to gain some compensatory picks and start building that kind of, you know, spinning wheel of value over time. So I like May. I think he's great, but right, is he worth bringing back? I think you're exactly right, Josh.
I think the biggest thing about that that's just screwy is, how do you not get out in front of that? Apparently he tried to like not report it to anybody. I don't know if you mentioned that, but like, that's the most fucked up part about it for me. It's like, do you really think the NFL and the New York Jets are not going to find out about this?
Right. I mean, it's they have a pretty extensive security team. And like, you know, one of the things that, you know, I don't think enough people talk about this, but, you know, I mean, I've been able to be around the draft and different events and, you know, talk to security teams, and like most teams have contracts with security staff where they basically just say, listen, I mean, now you've got Uber, like there's so many ways in which you can, you know, avoid this stuff. But effectively, like the team's policies are effectively, if you're ever in a situation where you don't think you should be driving, like, we don't care. We'd rather you just call us and we'll get it taken care of, get you a, you know, a town car or whatever, and get that situation like taken care of, rather than have to deal with the repercussions of this, right? It's worth more to us. It's annoying, but it's worth more to us in the long run to get you what you need. And I understand these are young people and they're having fun and, you know, all that sort of thing. But at the same time, there is this sense of like, it's not like they didn't have, these players don't have options. And so it's sad when they don't take advantage of them. And like, the team is very earnest in trying to put these things in place for them. So, right. So yeah, there's going to be blowback eventually. And you're right, it's not something you can hide. So just get out ahead of it, as you say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Travis, we need to talk something that you literally low key predicted like a week or two ago, which is Jonathan Myers got a new contract from the New York Jets. So the terms of the deal were that, I think it was about $55 million deal over 4 years. The terms of the deal are such that basically he will, you know, if he stays with the team, he'll be with the team through 2025. When you look at the only year that the Jets are in a, like a dead money or situation where they can't really cut him, depending on their cap situation,
is 2022, which is next year, so no problem. And then after that point, 23, 24, 25, it's a team-friendly deal. This is a guy who's currently 25 years of age, so by the time his contract ends, he'll just be roughly about 30. You know, this is a player that really no one saw coming, you know, coming from Stephen F. Austin, you know, coming to the Jets in 2018. Oh, sorry, with the Rams, and then they signed him after that, right? So, I mean, I don't know. When you think about JFM and you think about this contract you get, like, what – and even if he couldn't keep up with Kyle Pitts, what do you think about this contract and the fact that you called it?
I'm in love with it. Like, I mean, that's what I absolutely, you know, I said almost verbatim. I'm afraid, you know, we're gonna put this off till free agency, and we're gonna lose him to, you know, somebody throwing insane amounts of money to him. And from what I've read on Twitter from some people, you know, he really loves playing for Robert Saleh. He really loves the Jets. Mm-hmm. He loves the fact that they put stock in him, and you know, I think that he gave him a little bit of a home team discount on that for them again getting out ahead of it. And saying, hey, we don't want you to get to that point. We want you here. And I love it. I really hope they do the same with Quincy Williams. I don't know when he hits free agency, but man, like, I love watching that dude hit. I know we talked about it last week, but God, I mean, that guy is just freaking awesome. So I can't say enough about, like, the potential in the future of the defense. I think it looks amazing. And I'm just head over heels about the fact that we're going to have him locked down for long term, because his potential is through the roof.
Quincy Williams has a contract with the Jets through 2022. And he's basically at, like, you know, not exactly minimum, but close to minimum levels. So he is someone who they can keep on their cap. If he continues to play the way he plays, I would assume they will, you know, maybe try and open negotiations with him in the offseason, or more likely, like, they want to see it, you know, through next year. And then, you know, during the season, they might do something like they did this year with JFM.
With JFM, yep.
Yeah, next year. Josh, I'm looking at JFM on Over the Cap. They have this awesome thing that they call their, like, valuation. And so it's basically like, hey, how is this person playing? How are they performing? And then, like, what would that actually be worth if you were paying them, like, you know, what their stats effectively, or their, you know, PFF grades, or however they calculate it, you know, what they would be worth. Do you think his valuation is, so he's currently making $900,000 this year. Do you think his actual valuation, based on the way he's performing, is above or below $13 million?
Ooh.
According to OTC's calculation.
According to OTC's calculation, I'm going to say he's playing over 13 million.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah. 14.7 million. Yeah, he's killing it this year. And so right, this is a person that you, to your point, Travis, you have to get ahead of, based on the fact that he's having an amazing year and a contract year. And if this is a person you want to keep on this team and want to make a, you know, a cornerstone piece of this defense over the next many years, you know, so, and this, and right, this is a guy who was drafted in the fourth round. This is the, you know, the, he is happy to get this money. And so happy to play for a good team. So yeah, I think this is going to work out well. And right, they can restructure if, you know, if his play lags, you know, 3 years from now or whatever, they're in a good situation. So yeah, I'm super excited about that. I'm really excited to see them get the sort of pieces that they need in place, and lock things down as they, you know, are obviously looking towards 2020 in some form or fashion. All right. Before we get out of here, we need to talk about our grading system. All right. So this week, I want you two to give me overall Golden Girls grades for the Jets. So this is offense, defense, coaching, special teams, everything. I need your grades. Travis, can I start with you? Can you give me your Golden Girls grade of the week?
You can, but it's actually – okay, so I stretched it out a little last week, and it's – the only grade I can give after this game is a grade that I wanted to give earlier, but again, I'm sticking within the confines of the Golden Girls, and this may not count, but I'm going to throw it out there. I'm giving – and since we're – and I'm going to say – I should get a pass because it's my birthday week and
happy I'm going birthday. Off script.
Thank yeah. you. The Jets aren't going to lose on my birthday. My birthday is Sunday.
I'm going to send you a cake that you can talk to for your birthday.
I thought you were going to send me one that's just like, it looks like a bed with shit on it.
We can do that too. Or send you some pull-ups. No, yeah, we can send
you. Can do amazing
I really
things
feel like if we ever do days. Have to make t-shirts for the show, one of them has to be something about shitting the bed.
Yes.
Okay. So on that note, one of my favorite quotes of all time, one of my favorite scenes of all time is actually from Ghostbusters 2. And it's Peter McNichol's character, Janos Poha, as he is walking through the art museum and he looks over at someone that's restoring a painting. And all he has to say is, "Everything you're doing is bad. I just want you to know that." So everything they get the Janos Poha of the week. It's again, it's not Golden Girls, but I feel like it's October. It's spooky. New Ghostbusters movie's coming out. It fits.
That's fair. I'll take it. And I think that there's a kicker here, which is like Bobby Brown, you know, was the, he did the main song for that. And that's kind of your like New Jack, you know, that's your New Jack jam. So like,
oh yeah, he was produced by Teddy Riley. So yeah,
right. Exactly.
Creator of New Jack Swing.
That's right. So I feel like, yeah, that's fair. So, all right, Josh, do you have a grade for us?
Boys, in the Golden Girls universe, the Golden Verse, as I like to call it, there's one main character who this might be a hot take, but I never really fully enjoyed really anything Dorothy ever did. I think there are moments where she's kind of the captain of the ship and keeping things moving forward. And at the end of the day, I always was much more, I laugh harder or have bigger reactions to the remaining cast, much more than I did for Dorothy. Very sullen, the perma frown, as she would often have on the show. And I know that's the character. This is nothing against the Queen Bee Arthur herself, but the character as Dorothy is really how I both saw the Jets play this week and how I felt watching the Jets play this week. They were frowning. I was frowning. Everybody was frowning. There's going to be a one-liner that's going to be pretty biting. I don't really have much good to say about anybody that's around me. And so we're all just going to be grumpy together. That's how I felt as I was running around, not mowing my lawn on Sunday, but leading a church and looking down at my phone and seeing that we were down 17-0, that we were making a mild comeback, but that the defense had finally broken at the end, giving up the late score, and there was nothing good that was going to come from the game. So my grade this week is a solid Dorothy plus for the Jets on Sunday in London.
All right.
You'd be proud of me, Josh. I was officiating a wedding right after the game.
Ooh, good for you.
Were you mowing the grass while you were officiating? Because
No. I don't think mowing the grass has any applicable thing.
Okay.
No. I think that's only Josh.
The analytics only work when I do it. Okay. This is clear.
All right.
Yeah, I've looked at the analytics.
I need to hear about this wedding. Why, number one, why would somebody let you officiate a wedding? That's what I have to know.
I don't know. This is my sixth one.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And to be honest, there seems to be a recurring theme. It seems to be people that made a pact at a bar, and I happened to be present when the pact was made because I'm ever present at a bar. So actually, I think 5 out of 6, that's been the case. Oh my God, Travis was there when we made this pact of like, if we're not married by 30, we're going to get married.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That was pretty much the long and short of it. I was there.
Were you wearing Jordans?
Yes,
he was. I actually broke out my Air Dior's for the wedding.
There he is. Woo! Oh my.
Yeah, I had on a purple and gray paisley tuxedo with my gray Air Dior's.
Gray Dior's, very nice. Yep. Oh my. All right.
Yep, I went full bore.
That's impressive. Very impressive. All right. Time for my grade. I'm going to give – you guys are getting weird with it. You guys have gotten weird with it. It's my turn to get weird with it. I'm going to get weird with it. Here's what I'm saying. Weird. I give the Jets a Jeff Porcaro. What did you say, Brian?
Of Toto.
Correct. I'm giving them to Jeff Porcaro because Travis, who do you think played the drums on "Thank You for Being a Friend" for Cynthia Fee?
No way.
Oh, it was my third favorite drummer of all time, the creator of the Porcaro Shuffle. Jeff Porcaro.
Wow. Of fame, played with Steely Dan, played with Toto, played with everybody.
You know where he was born?
I'm
looking this up right now. Born in the great city of Hartford, Connecticut, right up the road from me.
Yep. Wow. He also played on virtually all of Michael Jackson's Thriller album.
Right. Oh man. And he had a serious theme in the Yacht Rock videos. So and his name is Porcaro. And his name is Porcaro. I mean, which is amazing.
Which rock legend dedicated a song to him and said that Porcaro was the best drummer he ever worked with? Ever. Guess who it was?
Neil Peart.
That's right. I know you're thinking it. It's Richard Marx.
Wow. Okay.
Please tell me he played drums on Hold On to the Night.
Yes.
He died while spraying insecticide in his yard. What a deep dive we need to do on this man. My goodness.
It also says he might have died because he was sniffing cocaine before he was.
Yeah.
Well,
putting insecticide in the yard.
Cause.
Okay. That didn't help. All right. Anyway, so yes.
Either way, Porcaro, how do we get there?
burned bright, went to the sun, gone too fast. Like I'm worried about this team. I'm worried about this quarterback. I'm worried about this offensive coordinator. We've seen some blinding, wonderful moments, but is this candle going to get snuffed out too soon? I don't know. So that's why I'm going with the drummer of "Thank You for Being a Friend."
Amazing.
And studio musician Jeff Porcaro.
The Jets are going to take some time to do the things they never have.
It's going to take a lot to drag me away from YouTube.
Oh my gosh. All right. Fellas. All right. We got to go from here. Travis, thank you for being a friend. Josh, thank you for being a friend. I hope we'll be back next week. We'll have to figure out something to talk about. Maybe we can bring on a guest and just goof around for an episode.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
If my Dodgers don't win, I'm going to be a very, very not happy person.
Okay. All right. Go Doyers and go runaway fraud embezzlers who are, supposedly showing up at the Dodgers game.
Dennis
2 years ago,
impersonators.
Yeah, because the FBI ran all their games through a facial recognition software and thought they saw somebody that it wasn't anyway. So, guys, thank you for being friends. Thanks to Scott from the Play Like a Jet Network for being a friend. If you were a friend, you would rate and review. Also, go check out. I know they're posting some merch, so check out that stuff. There's a great shirt. What does it say? Bless you. Thank you. That looked amazing. I've got to get myself one of those shirts. So thank you. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.